Play and stay on Washington State's Kitsap Peninsula, the natural side of the Puget Sound. Stand up paddleboarding, hiking, great restaurants and breweries. I'll tell you more about your next vacation destination later in the show. I'm Rachel Bell, and this is Your Last Meal, the show where celebrities share stories about the foods they love most, and we dig into the history, culture, and science of those meals with experts from around the world. Today on the program, Gavin Rossdale. Lead singer and guitarist for Bush. Bush was one of the most popular grunge bands of the 1990s, and last year they released Loaded, the greatest hits 1994 to 2023. And Gavin loves to cook. He is super into food and hosting dinner parties and cooking big, delicious meals for his family. And being from England, he has a special place in his heart for a Sunday roast. So we're going to dig into a British Sunday roast dinner, course by course, with a food historian named Dr. Buttery. That's coming up later in the program, but first, my conversation with Gavin Rossdale. You are so chefy. I am looking at your Instagram account where there's truffles. I watched that video that People Magazine did where they went into your kitchen and you were showing all of your gadgets and your sous vide. So I'm just really curious where your love of cooking came from, where it started.
I don't really know. I don't have great stories of sort of growing up with a grandmother who get me all the recipes and show me how to make pasta, like quite the opposite. So it's weird. I had a love affair with food by going every year to the Costa Brava with my dad. I'd never had food like that growing up in England. The simplest things that they would do seemed so extreme, and like, you know, have a grilled tomato, just a fine dice of garlic on top as a garnish. So I fell in love with food, the taste of food, from those experiences.
The Costa Brava is in northeast Spain, and Gavin's family took a two-week holiday there every year of his childhood.
That European approach to food, freshest of produce, and just simply handled. I fell in love with food, and then I just got into making it when I was, you know, living on my own. So it was quite simple. And then I think it just blossomed. I have a knack for it. I'm a home cook, but a knack of just getting things to taste good and look good. I love it. I have a big family, so I cook for them every night. It's a great thing. It's very European, I think, to really break bread, sit down every night. We have dinner together, spending time, really fun.
What are your favorite things to make for your kids, or what do you think the best things are, like the things that they're going to remember that they love the most?
Well, I know what their particular favorites are. So with my eldest, Kingston or Daisy as well, they love the roast dinners. They love the whole Yorkshire pudding, just everything that goes with it. You have three or four sides, you have the roast potatoes, you have the gravy, you drink a nice red wine. It's followed by some kind of stupid English dessert. It's just, it's a lot of fun. So they like the roasts, but...
Hold on a second. Why do you say it's a stupid English dessert?
I found that most people outside of England are a little bit, I'm not sure they're ready for the treacle pudding and the kind of spotted dick. All these things, these spongy custard. Just for us... It feels like love. It feels like you're not getting shouted at school. Worst thing being at school in England was cold and shout at you. And that the best thing used to be the chocolate sponge dessert with the chocolate custard with any respite. So we all love desserts because it was school's miserable for everyone in England. So there's something really nice about the desserts that they'd give us, you know.
So they'd give you dessert in the school cafeteria and you finally had some comfort after being yelled at all day in the cold. I feel like we can't just cruise past spotted dick without any explanation. Spotted dick is a classic British dessert. It is a steamed pudding, which in England translates to a steamed cake. And it's traditionally made with suet, animal fat. As for the name, spotted refers to the raisins or currants that are laced throughout the batter. They look like spots, so that's the spotted. And dick is simply an old-fashioned word for pudding. Years ago, so many years ago, a radio listener sent me a can of Heinz Spotted Dick. Yes, it comes in a can. And I proudly displayed it on my desk for over a decade. I still have it. I will never open it. And I hope to be buried inside of it someday. When we come back, what is Yorkshire pudding? How do you make the crispiest, fluffiest roast potatoes? We are going to go deep on the British tradition of Sunday roast. If you're a fan of naturally gorgeous, off-the-beaten-path vacation spots with small-town charm, you're going to want to plan a visit to Washington State's Kitsap Peninsula, where you can grab a scoop of homemade ice cream and stroll around the adorable European seaside village of Paulsbo, or walk on the ferry in Seattle and get off in downtown Bainbridge Island. And May is the perfect month to visit Bremerton or Silverdale, where you can get out of the city and into the forest in just 15 minutes for a beautiful hike. Enjoy a farm-to-table meal at Bremerton's Restaurant Lola, a Black-owned business. I really need to make the trip out there for their Creole brunch. And in the morning, stop by Saboteur Bakery for croissants that are so flaky and buttery, you'll think you're in Paris. There's also a gorgeous golf course in the middle of the forest, and there are several naval museums in Bremerton. Go to visitkitsap.com/yourlastmeal to learn more. That's K-I-T-S-A-P. Or you can find a link in the show notes. Play and stay on the Kitsap Peninsula, the natural side of the Puget Sound. If you like listening to Your Last Meal, you might like watching my new TV show, The Nosh with Rachel Bell. We just wrapped up season one, so there are 4 tasty episodes ready for you to binge at cascadepbs.org. In episode 1, I convince an East Coast skeptic that Seattle now has fantastic bagels. And in the season finale, we go truffle hunting just about an hour outside of Seattle. Episodes are a quick bite. Just 8.5 minutes long. So grab a snack and cozy up with The Nosh. Available anytime, anywhere at cascadepbs.org or find a link in the show notes. So you grew up in London. I'm curious what food was like in your house growing up.
Well, my dad actually was a pretty good cook. I grew up with my mom till I was 12, and she actually is a really good cook as well.
What are some of your favorite things from growing up?
I have like his roasts, all the kind of holiday, roast turkey, roast chicken, just any roast meat he would always do effortlessly. And, you know, we have great Maris Piper potatoes, so they, you know, those in some duck fat, perfect, you know, gravy. So our roasts are like really, really good. So those are the funnest memories. And then some of the time now I'm doing it with my kids, I think, how did he do that? Like a single dad, and then he did have a regular stepmom later on when I was like 15 or 16. But he did a lot. I had a full-time job. And sort of, I can't really remember. I wish I knew more about what he did. I was always a washing up guy. So I'm really good at washing up. I'm better at washing up than cooking.
Well, it looks like you're a good cook, so you must have very clean plates. Yeah. Can you just explain to the audience what a roast is? Because in the States, when you hear a roast, somebody just thinks of like a big piece of meat, like a roasted piece of meat. But this is talking about this whole traditional Sunday meal.
This is a roast in England. You can choose any meat. It's, you know, roast beef, roast lamb, or roast chicken is the most probably common. And it's a very big tradition in England. And people will start the roast dinner in the morning. And it's a time for everyone to get together, but most people go to the pub. They start the process, then you go to the pub while it's cooking really slow. It's probably where slow cooking came from, because it was invented in England so that people could spend longer in the pubs. And then so you go there and have a few beers on a Sunday, and then go home. You would have a Sunday roast, and then followed by the football. That was everything about being English growing. That's what mm-hmm. we would do. Anyone who's English did that. The pub bit is optional, but they'd still be drinking at home. So the location may change, but that's the timetable. It's really great. And then everyone, like, you know, spends Sunday night kind of like blankly staring at the TV screen, wishing that school wasn't coming or work wasn't coming. That's what a roast is. You know, it can be quite elaborate. And all the gastro pubs as well, they also do really good Sunday roasts. And so when you find a place that does a Sunday roast, it's even better. Don't have to go through all the palaver. I don't mind the effort, by the way. I'm into the effort. So I spent like a night and an early morning, it's about 7 or 8 hours, preparing 6 main dishes to freeze. So every night we have like, didn't have to think about it too much.
A Sunday roast, or a roast dinner in England, is not just a piece of roasted meat. It's an entire mid-afternoon meal basically made up of the same components, starting with a roasted meat.
That's why there's roast in the name. Favorites being chicken, number one, roast beef, lamb, maybe pork. Nothing's actually roasted anymore on spit roasts in front of fires. It's all done in the oven. It's a Sunday bake, really.
That is Dr. Neil Buttery, food historian, chef, food writer, and podcaster, and person with a very appropriate name. Although, personally, I think he should probably head up the British Butter Council or go on tour with the band Bread. But these are dad jokes for another time. I am trying to tell you what makes up a Sunday roast.
I suppose the next important thing on the list is the roast potatoes. Personally, I think they should be cooked in something like duck fat or goose fat or something like that to get them nice and crispy. Is roast potatoes a thing in America?
Yes, but I have seen videos and pictures of the way that you do your potatoes, and it feels a little bit different. I feel like you get yours crispier and, you know, kind of like softer and fluffier on the outside with like a very crispy outside. Yeah. Is there like a certain method for getting them that way?
Yeah, I think so. So if you're going to really pay attention to detail, and the thing is, you've got to pay attention to detail for roast potatoes, because I would say it's the most important thing. If you mess up the roast potatoes, you've messed up Sunday dinner. It's more important than the meat, I think. So what you got to do is you pop them into boiling water just for about 2 minutes, and then drain them, and then give them a really good shake in the pan so they get all sort of rough edged. But they look slightly fluffy, almost velvety, before you've put them in the oven. But because of that, you really increase the surface area. So there's more coverage of oil. So there's more crispiness, essentially. That's what you're doing. If you roast them like that, you get really crispy outsides and they're really fluffy inside.
Neil says some people do mashed potatoes instead of roasted.
Some people, and this is a controversial thing, some people go double potato. Why choose? There's roast parsnips, especially in the autumn and winter time. We have roast parsnips done in a similar way to roast potatoes. And then it's your veg, boiled or steamed, peas, green beans. And then you've got your gravy, which is a little different to gravy in the US. Because in the US, of course, you have your gravy and biscuits.
Oh, for breakfast, we do that.
Yeah, but yeah. Gravy in Britain, well, it changes depending where you are in Britain, but it's usually just the sort of the juices and the nice burnt bits from the bottom of the roasting tin mixed with some stock, maybe a bit of wine, and then it's thickened with roux or some cornstarch or something like that. People in the south of England really go for thin gravy that's not thickened at all. And as you get further north, it gets thicker and thicker.
Huh. Why is that?
Do you know what? Good question. I don't know, but it's a big difference. I've got a friend who's from Devon, and they were really shocked when they moved up to Manchester. I live in Manchester in the north of England. They were shocked at this thick gravy.
Well, the way you describe making gravy, that's exactly how we make our gravy too. So when you're talking about biscuits and gravy, that's more of like a southern thing where it's the white gravy, like with the milk in it. That's not like something that you would use if you were making roast meat. It's like exclusively kind of for the sausage gravy for breakfast over biscuits.
I understand. I used to live in Texas, you see. So my reference when it comes to US gravy is the kind you have with sausage or with biscuits or whatever.
I have never had a British Sunday roast, but the food that I most associate with the meal, the food that I really want to try, is Yorkshire pudding, which is basically a savory Dutch baby, or what we might call a popover.
Obviously, if you're from Yorkshire, I'm from Yorkshire originally, and yeah, it's very important. We're quite proud of our Yorkshire pudding. For some, a Sunday roast isn't a Sunday roast unless there's a Yorkshire pudding in there. And some people even serve their roast dinner inside a great big Yorkshire pudding.
Oh, really? Oh, I love that. So what is Yorkshire pudding?
Well, it's essentially a pancake batter. A crepe batter, but instead of frying it in a pan, you know, on the stove, you're putting it in a tray or sometimes muffin tins as well with a bit of oil underneath. You pour it in. You got to have the oil really hot. So you got to put the pan in the oven for a good 15 minutes so the oil can get super duper hot. You can bring it out, pour your batter in, shove it back in the oven as quickly as possible. And it raises up around the outside. Sometimes you can get it really high.
For everyone who can't see, Neil is like raising the roof like he's up in a club in 1993.
Exactly. You get this coronation crown of a pudding that comes out. People are very particular about what a proper Yorkshire pudding should be.
Yeah.
So I think the little ones are popovers. And I think a proper Yorkshire pudding's got to be done in a tray or maybe a big round cake tin or something like that. It's got to be big. The reason I say that is because you want nice, high, crispy sides, but you want the middle to still be cooked, but a little bit soft. So you've got a contrast of textures there.
Okay, yeah. But you would spread it out across the whole pan. It would just be like one big poof?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, and then you cut it in squares?
That's right, you cut it in squares, and then it's a, you know, it's a fifer who gets the bit that they want. Some people want a corner piece because it's more crispy. Some people like just a centerpiece because they just like the soft bottom piece.
So let's talk about the etymology a little bit, because I know in Britain, a pudding is usually a dessert, but I think of it as a sweet. So why is it called a pudding?
Well, that is a good question. It's the number one question I get asked, I would say, what is a pudding? Because it's so many different things. Well, some people might say, oh, a proper pudding's got to be steamed or boiled. We call blood sausage black pudding in Britain, for example. So that's a pudding too, not just a dessert.
Yeah, you guys call 97% of things you eat puddings.
Yeah, it's easier to say or easier to ask what isn't a pudding.
Yeah, exactly. So when you're having the Sunday roast meal and you have your Yorkshire pudding there, do you tear it apart and dip it in the gravy? Is it used kind of like bread in that way?
Yeah, a little bit. So if people have got smaller individual ones, people really like to pour the gravy into the pudding.
Oh.
That's a favorite.
So you have the meat, you have the potatoes, you have the vegetable, and you have the Yorkshire pudding. Is there any other component of this meal?
No, I mean, you might, if you're feeling fancy, do some cauliflower cheese or something. That's about it, I would say.
Do folks eat this every Sunday?
Some people religiously have it every Sunday. You know, it's a very important thing. But I don't have it every Sunday. I probably do a roast dinner, well, I mean, this is terrible, maybe 4 or 5 times a year. But no matter how often you eat it, whether it's once or twice a year or every single Sunday, they're definitely viewed with fondness and, you know, the sort of food memories. They're really attached to our food culture.
Yeah.
I think if you go back further in time, more people are sitting down to their Sunday dinner. Things are changing a lot. I don't know what it's like in the US, but people are eating as a family less and less frequently.
Yeah.
So I think that's changed for starters. You know, you kind of have to have all the family round a table at once. And I think that's something that is getting trickier and trickier to do for a lot of families.
Can you get it in a restaurant?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I used to have a little restaurant just for a couple of years. It's quite a few years ago now, but we used to do Sunday roasts and we were sold out every single week.
I don't know how long you were living in the States, but was that something that you were homesick for when you were living away from Britain?
Yes. It must be the number one most pined over food for anybody. Anybody's British who's moved away.
It's pretty much impossible to pinpoint when this tradition started.
When have you suddenly invented a Sunday dinner? There's no potatoes in medieval Europe, for starters, so we're taking potatoes out of the equation. Now, a lot of people would say that's not a Sunday dinner if you haven't got potatoes. We've been roasting meat since we were Neanderthals or something.
Right.
Is that when Sunday dinner? You know, so it's an evolution, slow evolution, and it's very hard to kind of say that's when Sunday dinner was invented.
Potatoes made their way to the UK from the New World. And Dr. Buttery says they weren't accepted as a vegetable that people were willing to eat until about the 18th or 19th century. So this exact meal, this Sunday roast, as we know it now, would not have been eaten before then. Same goes for another iconic British dish, fish and chips. Dr. Buttery has his favorite recipe for Yorkshire pudding up on his blog, and he says Delia Smith and Nigella Lawson have the best recipes for Sunday roast style roasted potatoes. So I will link all of those recipes in the show notes. Time for a quick break, but when we come back, Gavin's last meal and the unusual place he keeps his prize guitars. Let's talk about your last meal. What would your last meal be?
I thought about this. I mean, there's so many meals that I really love. We grew up in London where we had no money before I sold any records. You know, you'd have one meal a day and you'd go out to like a cafe near me. So when I was a kid, like, well done bacon, fried eggs, sunny side up, bacon, chips, and tomato was like my diet from 17 to 25. That was what was affordable, local, just that's what I could do. I love.
Would you have the baked beans with it too?
No, I never had the baked beans with it because they really infiltrate the eggs. No. I don't mind beans on toast or beans on their own. They're fantastic, but it's just annoying. I never liked it as a kid. It was always like, nah, this doesn't go. But I like them separately. So wouldn't have that. The tomatoes would take the place of that. But so that's a really basic meal that kind of feeds my DNA. And then, you know, I'm in love with Italian food. I'm in love with pasta. You know, I'm in love with great carbonara. Change your whole night, change your whole life. You know, so any pasta, me getting lost in Italy on tour and going to find like small places where there's just like a couple of ladies in the back cooking all this heaven on earth. So I would have one of those ladies from some of the restaurants over here in Cooperman last meal, and they could choose. So I'd be happy with any.
Lady's choice pasta, maybe carbonara, and then this English breakfast sans beans that you used to eat when you were younger.
Yeah. Because I'm basic at heart. You know, really, it's unfortunately a bit about the meat and the potato. And, you know, I wish it wasn't. I've been a vegetarian. I've been a vegan. I've been everything. And I've tried. And it's annoying that it just suits me to follow this diet, you know, very simple, basic diet that's people have had for a very, very long time.
For his last meal, Gavin Rossdale wants a classic English breakfast. Bacon, eggs, chips, and grilled tomato, and pasta made by an old Nona in Italy. I was watching a video of Gavin in his kitchen, and he was sitting in front of a huge walk-in wine refrigerator. There was something else that you had cooling in there that was not a food item.
Yeah, I keep lots of my guitars, 15, 20 guitars, which is now my two boys, my two eldest boys, really into guitar and being really good at guitar. So I'm sliding down the pole of like the bragging rights for guitar in my house. It's a bit of a worry. But 15 and 17, they're far better than I ever was. So that's how that goes. So there's more guitars than that. It's a reach. Getting a bottle of wine is a reaching process where it used to be sort of a demure walk around a couple of nice guitars. Now I'm going to like navigate the terrain.
Is that something that's common? I've never heard of keeping them in a refrigerator.
They're just in a constant temperature. What happens, I have been very valuable emotionally and physically. It used to belong to Joe Walsh, and I got it and I played all my first records, 16 Stone, on it. So they played Loaded It Souls. It's a very particular guitar. I left it in my old house in the studio, and air conditioning got turned off. It was just a room in a house. And the neck bow bent. They had to reset it and rebake it to the wood. So I was like, oh my God, I can't change the tuning on it. It has to be regular standard tuning, not my crazy detuned stuff. And I keep it in there so that the temperature's consistent.
I feel like cooking and music are both arts. Do you feel like there's something that connects the two?
Timing. I think it's the alchemy. That's why Miles Davis said every musician should be a cook. Because you have to understand when things are ready. I have a sixth sense of the five things I'm doing, when to start, so that everything ready at once. So I'm super relaxed in the kitchen. I really don't get stressed. You know, some people are like, don't talk to me, I'm going to get all that sort of stuff. It's completely against the spirit of it, I think. So you stay relaxed and you have a concept of where the meal is going to end up. And like a roast, for example, it's always dictated by the potatoes because the meat can rest, it should rest as long, half as long as I cooked it. So I always know during the meal what has to go first, what has to be done.
And so is that the same with music, the timing?
Well, it's just understanding just the combination of things and what makes it great. So I think the similarity between them is that they both take this alchemy to happen. And you have to know when and where to put those elements in order for them to coagulate in a kind of a harmonious way that people would like to listen to or to eat. Or in my case, listen to as they eat. Technique is king. Technique is everything. Whatever it is, whether it's music, whether it's cooking, whether it's making clothes, it's like when you start to know what it takes to get to that end place that you love, each time you do it, you just get a little better at it. Each time you do it, a little better.
And that was Gavin Rossdale's last meal. Well, thank you so much for your time. It was so nice to meet you. Admittedly, I had posters of you on my wall when I was 14 years old, so it's really come full circle for me. I don't know if you had posters of me on your wall when you were 14. Maybe.
I planned your advertising material for your website all over somewhere.
We can get you like a life-size. Well, thanks again.
Okay, thank you so much.
Cheers. Bye. Bush is heading out on a big American summer tour starting this June. You can find a link in the show notes to get tickets. And Gavin has been filming a show called Eat with Gavin Rossdale. He has folks like Tom Jones over to his place. He cooks them a meal and then he films their conversation. It doesn't have a home quite yet, but he's hoping it will find a home on your TV very soon. Thanks to food historian Dr. Neil Buttery, host of the British Food History Podcast. Your Last Meal is a product of Cascade PBS. The show was created and hosted by me and produced by me and Isaac Kaplan-Wilner, who also constructed and mastered this episode. Original theme music by Prom Queen. You can find me on Instagram, Hello Rachel Bell. You can subscribe to my newsletter, rachelbell.substack.com. And this is something I haven't talked about on the podcast yet. I am hosting a brand new food TV show. I'm very excited about it. It's called The Nosh with Rachel Bell. And the first episode drops the first Friday of April. There's going to be a new episode every Friday in April. And you can either watch online at cascadepbs.org. Or if you live in Washington or British Columbia, Canada, you can watch on your local PBS station. Hope you'll give it a watch. More details to come. I'm Rachel Bell, and this is Your Last Meal.